With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, welcome to Remote Control, the Variety's TV podcast. I'm Deborah Birnbaum. Every week, we'll bring you conversations with some of the best and brightest in television, working behind and in front of the camera. On today's episode, we're talking with Edie Falco about her role in Law & Order True Crime, The Menendez Murders. Stay tuned.
Edie Falco, thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate you stopping by.
Happy to be here.
Tell us, congratulations on your Emmy nomination for work in
Law
& Order True Crime, The Menendez Murders.
Yes.
It was a really riveting revision of a time of a case that, of course, so many people remember. It was even before OJ, and it was just as we were really starting to see this intense media coverage of a very sordid case. What made you say yes to playing defense attorney Leslie Abramson?
It was a big news item, but it was not what a big news item is today. So it was only peripherally in my awareness at the time. And all I knew it was these two sort of bratty Beverly Hills kids who killed their parents, and that's where I put it in my head, and that was the end of it. But once I sat down with Dick Wolf and he told me what the real story was, it's so funny in a time of fake news how much that affected me, that I had just been told inaccuracies about that story, and a terrible injustice had been done, and that was moving to me. So that's how I got involved.
Have you met Leslie Abramson? Did you get a chance to talk with her?
She was not interested in becoming involved in this. They did approach her, and very few people wanted to revisit this. Her in particular, I think, it is either my understanding or my being surmising that this was not one of the happier chapters in her life and didn't want to participate.
The miniseries makes clear, it's a huge commitment when a defense attorney takes on a case like this.
Right.
And she was such the advocate for them. You know,
she really cared about these guys, and Eric in particular. Who's to say what's an appropriate amount of involvement? But she was in there. She was in very deep, and they were young kids, you know.
Did you get a sense of, I mean, the miniseries makes absolutely clear that she even says at one point, I know they did it, mm-hmm. but they deserve the best defense we can give them.
Right.
What drove her, all-consuming passion to see what measure of what she believed to be justice for the brothers?
Well, I certainly cannot tell you that definitively. I don't know. But I think she was aware of the ramifications of consistent child abuse and historical child abuse, because it was not just the parents of these boys, but their parents. You know, this went on for generations, and the effects of it don't just go away. Nobody's above the law, and it's never okay to murder, but it is important that people understand the what came first. And I think that really moved her, or it certainly made me understand how she might be moved to really take this on in an emotional way.
Mm-hmm. For you, going back to that period of the early 90s, those boxy suits and the big jackets, what was it like for you to put your mind back to a period that, you know, you obviously lived through and probably, you know, remember that fashion sense?
I didn't have the kind of job at the time that would require wearing those things very often, but I certainly, you know, was privy to them and clearly understood why they are long gone. But it was also fun. I mean, it was so well done. between, you know, the set design and costumes, and it was such a good, talented bunch of people working on it in that regard, that you really can just fall into a little bit of a time warp, because everywhere you looked was an extra or a character dressed appropriately, carrying the appropriate, you know, briefcase or whatever, and it was very interesting. It's a real kind of a mind game, but that's, you know, I don't know, to some extent what acting is.
So. Yeah, and a time, you know, just before the internet changed everything, a time before everybody had a telephone and a computer in their hand.
Right, that's right. You were very fancy if you had anything that even approximated that kind of technology.
Yeah. In terms of, to bring Leslie to life, in terms of your process and your research, is it the kind of thing will you look at footage of her? Will you look at photos of her? Will you try to embody visually what you know, what she looked like back then?
I mean, she was a very specific character, physically and otherwise, and it was important to get some of the larger characteristics of who this woman was. But I was not interested in doing an imitation of her physically. And you know, I did watch plenty of footage. There's certainly much less than if this was happening now. But how she looked, how she comported herself, don't even know if that's a word, comported. Anyway, her hair was a big part of who this woman was. A consummate New Yorker, the way she spoke, the way she carried herself. So that stuff was important and interesting to me. But more important is what the story was about and how important it was to her.
Her motivation.
Right.
For doing
it,
yeah.
Right.
Have you ever played a real person that is essentially a contemporary real person who's still living that people can judge your look versus, you know?
No, I don't believe I have. I've played people based on real people, and I've met those real people, but it was very clear that it was not to, you know, look like them or sound like them. So, no, this was the first time. And it is a little, you know, I didn't know how I would feel about it, but it did become clear early on. This is, people knew who she was, but it wasn't like people were going to say, oh, that's not what she looked like. You know what I mean? It was more like it's a suggestion of who she was. And then, you know, to sort of internalize the words that we had, many of which were actually taken from the actual testimony. So
right. You had real stuff. Thousands of pages, undoubtedly,
Her real stuff, the real words from her brain. Yeah.
Now, this was, of course, part of the Law and Order world, and I know it's something that NBC hopes will be a recurring kind of true crime franchise. Actually, not too far removed from the era of that Menendez crime, you were on the original Law and Order a couple of episodes playing a defense attorney. How was it for you to insert yourself back into that world 25 years later?
It was such a long time ago, and so much, there's been so much water under the bridge since then. So
that, you know, many characters.
Right. When I finish a project, it very quickly kind of disappears into the ether and becomes a memory. So it was, and because the time period was different, so it felt very different. But Law and Order, the whole franchise is like a staple of New York City acting life. It's like a rite of passage. You have to have done a Law and Order, you know, to be a legitimate actor. And Dick Wolf has been really very supportive of me and kind to me in all the years that I've been in New York. A real kind of peripheral figure in my life that has, you know, everybody should have one or two of them. That just, I always felt like he believed in me, and he thought I could do good work, and I was very, you know, moved that he thought of me for this and thought that I could do it and all that. He's a good man, and he's got a good thing going, you know.
Yeah, yeah, he's got something going
he
right there.
Quit his day
yeah.
job, I think.
Was those early Law and Order appearances, like in, I think, 1993, 94, would you say those were big builders for your career?
I never know. I never know what leads to anything else. But it was legitimate for me. It was like a legitimate job, and I had a fitting and, you know, all the things that, you know, made it seem like, wow, I'm working, you know. And I was working with, I worked with Michael Moriarty, to this day, one of the best actors I've ever worked with. And same with Sam Waterston and people I respected a great deal. It was one of the first times I actually got to say words to in a scene with these actors I really respected. It was an exciting time.
Mm-hmm. Well, fast forward 25 years, you know, we're in this incredible moment of content and creativity and outlets for all manner of shows and 500 and odd on the air.
Oof.
How do you, I have no doubt your phone rings every day with somebody, I have the part for you. How do you go about selecting? How do you decide what you're going to do in any given period?
Whatever it is that makes a decision like that is not in my my intellectual brain. You know what I mean? I have some sort of system that works that I don't entirely understand. I read it, and if it's something I want to continue reading or something that makes my heart rate increase literally, it's likely something that I'll do. I'll tell you what, it doesn't happen a lot because I've worked on some really good stuff, and you know, they're hard to live up to, and I see no reason to kind of go backwards. So it's not always easy choosing, and there are other variables. I live in New York, and I like to work in New York, so that's a big one. My kids are here, and I don't just pick up and go to, you know, Zimbabwe for 6 months. So it's limiting, but if I read something and it seems interesting to me, usually for reasons I can't articulate, that will be the next thing I do.
Mm-hmm. Do the limited series like Law and Order, True Crime, the Menendez murders, are those, we're hearing a lot of actors saying those are really kind of wonderful because you can commit for a significant but not an open-ended commitment.
Right.
Does that appeal to you, that this sort of rise of the limited series or what we used to know as miniseries?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it does. It does. I can't say it appeals to me more than ongoing series. The truth is, I mean, for 20 years I did Sopranos and Nurse Jackie, and it is the ideal job for me. I love the ongoingness of them. I don't like sitting around waiting to find out if there is an ongoingness to them. But,
right.
But the idea that the story would continue as, you know, people's lives continue, it suits me. So, but the eight-part thing is also fun, and, you know, so is a movie. Yeah, there are very few things I would say, oh, I would never do one of those. Each has its own charm and disadvantages.
Mm-hmm. So are you in the market for a new series? It's been a couple of years since Nurse Jackie ended its run on Showtime.
Yeah, for sure. I do, I love the venue. You know, I love the idea of knowing who a character is. You kind of establish that in the first part of the first season, and then you kind of get an idea of who this person is, and let's see her go through all kinds of different things. There's that. And personally, you know, I just like working. I like working, and I like working consistently. I love showing up on a set where I know everybody, and we have a rapport. I mean, it really is, it's the ideal job for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's hoping that something something crosses your desk that
there is
makes
a lot
your heart,
going on right
makes
now.
Your heart
you
race.
Know?
Yeah,
yeah. We'll see.
Is there anything in the pipeline that is of interest to you right now? Or?
There might be. Mm-hmm. There might. You know, there are little ideas glimmering in places. But now the industry changing so quickly. I don't know. You know, the companies. Oh, it's being done by, you know, like, I don't know, Frigidaire or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I have no idea what's going on these days. So. And, you know, they already have the money or they don't have the money and they want to use your name to get the money. I don't know what anything means anymore. But lots of ideas come across my desk that I don't have. You know, some more and less interesting than others. But I never know what's going to happen. Until I have a script in front of me and a call time, I just, you know, it's all just talk.
But I imagine that you and your representatives have to be wary of the idea that somebody's going to say, oh, I've got Edie Falco attached, and
right.
now I'm going to go out and get, you know, I'm going to scour Europe for the financing.
That's right.
That's got to be
something. I'm not crazy about that.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
It seems to be happening more and more, and I just, because the second I read a script and I find it interesting, some part of my brain is already gathering information. I don't do it on purpose. And then they're like, ah, the money fell through. And I'm like, what do you mean? You know, I've already invested, you know, by accident is a certain amount of psychic energy to the project. So that's a new phenomenon, one that I'm not crazy about.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about, I know you recently made a movie for Netflix The Land of Steady Habits,
right,
with Ben Mendelsohn and Connie Britton.
Right.
Sounds like a pretty good cast.
Yeah, and Nicole Hollis-Center, which was the original appeal for me. I've been a fan
of her director.
Movies. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've been a fan of her movies forever. We all kind of came up together in the independent film scene,
uh-huh.
and, I've loved her movies, and many of my friends have worked with her, so I was so thrilled that they thought of me for this. She's great. She's great and smart, and she doesn't, a lot of early directors, like people who are new, have a certain kind of panicky energy, and they're never sure they got the right number of takes or whatever. The fact that she's been doing this for a while and I've been doing it, we can really just get down to what's important. What is the scene about? What's the best way to tell the story and all that stuff. Ben Mendelsohn is a force to be reckoned with. He's like a sparkler. That's what he feels like a 4th of July sparkler. He's just got crazy energy. So interesting and such a good guy. And Connie, I really only met in the trailer, and she seemed absolutely lovely. That's all I can say about that. And she's great in the movie, really great.
The years, of course, you are so known for Carmela Soprano. You're known for your dramatic acting, stage acting, but you've very often shown a comedic side. You had a great couple episodes of 30 Rock back in the day, and Nurse Jackie was a really sometimes surreal blend,
yes,
of pathos and bathos. Would you be open to doing something, to committing to a show that was straight comedy, a series?
Oh, that's a good question. I could do an 8-part miniseries. Because committing to a long term of that, the truth is I don't know, because I've never done an ongoing thing like that. But the nourishment I get from doing a non-comedic series or a non-completely comedic series is, telling deeper stories about people and whatever, the way their emotional lives work and the way people relate. I get fed in a certain way from those things. And comedy is its own animal and great joy to do a play or an episode of something, but I don't know if it would be satisfying for me in the way that I need to be satisfied by this work that I do. I just don't know is the answer to that. But the idea of just doing a straight, if someone's advertised it to me, it's a comedy and, she's really goofy and she always wears this red nose, I feel like I just don't think you may not have the right gal for that one.
You need the depth.
I think I do.
Yeah.
I think I do. But, I mean, Tina Fey in 30 Rock, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Veep, like it's that stuff is spectacular work, and I'm sure it is its own kind of reward. It's just not something I'm familiar with.
There's been a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks about it starting to come together. David Chase is bringing a Sopranos prequel movie together. Has David Chase approached you at all or even talked to you about what he's thinking with that project?
Not at all. I found out about it like everybody else, I think, on the news. And I think my agent called and said, has he contacted you? and I've certainly seen him since then. And Larry Connor, the other writer. But yeah, it is... I would say completely unrelated, not really, but certainly to anything that I would have anything to do with. I would be as excited as any fan of the show to see it, God knows, because the two of those guys together, David Chase and Lawrence Connor, it's very exciting, very exciting.
Is there, I know this is a tough question given the passing of James Gandolfini, but is there any scenario in which you could see any of the Sopranos actors getting back together in some vehicle related to the Sopranos?
I do. I could. I'm not a writer. That's not a part of my brain that I know or have exercised. But yeah, I even said to David once, and he kind of laughed at me. But I said, I think Carmela should take over the family business. I think she knows enough about it, and the guys would have to answer to her. And he was like, that was the end of that. But I don't know. I mean, It is the land of people just, continuing old series and stuff. And mm-hmm. I think there's a part of me that also is not thrilled with that. I love the fact that we ended it when we did and we could walk away from something being very proud of it. So it is, it's likely that that is what will happen.
Mm-hmm. Are there any, do you have any, from The Sopranos, any friendships that have really endured, any of the actors or
people that worked on the show. My closest friend is Aida Turturro. She's at my house right now as we speak.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, and I'll be going to her house for the weekend. So, yes, I see her quite a bit. She played Janice.
Once your sister-in-law, always your sister.
That's always the sister-in-law. That's right. And Eileen Landris was one of the producers. She and I are mm-hmm. still very close. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm always at least a little bit in touch with a lot of the other actors and a lot of the crew people. It really was a very special time, certainly in my life, because the show was well-received, but also because to go through that with a bunch of people, to start out like, I don't know, we'll see what the show is and if people watch it, and to have it turn into this very successful thing, it's quite a thing to go through with a bunch of young actors. You never know if you're even going to work, and then something like this happens, and it is turbulent, and mostly good, but also a little, you know, can set you off your balance a little bit.
Yeah, there are a lot of attendant dramas that
right.
can come in success, especially.
That's right. Jim Gandolfini told me once that some guy was like, "Oh my God, I love you." He picked up his shirt. He had a tattoo of Tony Soprano on his back, huge. And Jim was like, you know. Was one of those moments where he was like, this is so much bigger than I thought this would be. Or like, and that's, you know, he was a very regular guy from New Jersey. It's intense. You know, you can't wash that off. You know what I mean? That's there forever. So it was weird. Some weird stuff to get used to.
I did an interview with you a couple years ago in a hotel in the Village. And as we walked through, we went to a small, quiet room. And as we walked through the hotel, the hotel... lobby coffee area, as we walked through, every head turned and recognized you. Is that something? I mean, this was Edie Falco walking through the hotel, and everybody then left and went out and said, "Oh my God, you won't believe who I saw today, Edie Falco." Is that something that is, as you said, is that hard to get used to? Is that something that you know that you're going to deal with on some level when you walk out of the house? Or,
well, you know, I have no memory of that, I have to say, first
okay.
of all. And I can't imagine that that's actually how it occurred. I will just say that, you know, I've been walking through the streets of Manhattan for, you know, I've been living here since whatever, for like 30-something years. So I have learned to kind of tune it out. So whoever may or may not be paying attention to me, it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with this thing that I do for a living, and then it's transmitted into their living room. You know what I mean? If I, at any point, start to think it has something to do with the me that's walking my kid to the bus stop, you know, that then all hell breaks loose. But I imagine it would be like my daughter has bright red hair, and she all the time, "Oh my God, that hair is so beautiful." You know, it's, people notice things, and, you know, you can deal with it in whatever way you want. I feel like something I came to understand is celebrity has two participants, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You have
right.
to decide that you're going to play the part of the celebrity if that is what you are to become, and that has never been interesting to me. I really am just a New Yorker.
Even after achieving a measure of
yeah.
awards and fame and, you know.
And the truth is, if they stop me and say, "Oh, you know, some nice thing or something," that's a constant source of nourishment for me. You know, it can only be good. It only feels good. Unless people are like, can you just stop for a second and call my sister in Cincinnati or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That kind of thing gets a little, you know,
you got places
intrusive.
To go,
that's
people
right.
to meet, right?
That's right. And I do have to get my daughter to the bus, you know. But, and my kids are like rolling their eyes. Like, they're kind of over it at this point. But there are good and bad things about it, like anything.
Would you say most of your encounters with people that recognize you are respectful? Are
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. The ones that, you know, didn't like the portrayal of Italian Americans, or the ones who were opposed to the idea of nurses taking drugs, you know, they for the most part don't approach me. They tell their friends.
<You know? laughs> Oh, she just sashayed
yes.
by me. Yeah,
I hated that show.
Do you when people do talk to you, is it equal measure Sopranos, Nurse Jackie, or would you say it's more Sopranos?
I'm going to say equal measures. I've been surprised by some of the enthusiasm for Nurse Jackie that has been expressed to me, and maybe that's just in the moment. You know, people, maybe they just saw an episode or something. Mm-hmm. But I think it's equal measures. I mean, Sopranos was 20 years ago at this point, the last episode was 10 years ago, but
yeah.
we started in '97.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You know, quite some time.
Yeah, it's hard to believe.
It is hard to believe.
And also next up for you later this year, you're doing a play, an off-Broadway play called The True. Tell us about it.
I start rehearsals shortly. I'm so excited. It's been a long time since I've done a play. And again, I read this play. I don't think I even knew who was producing it or where it was being performed or anything. And I read it and was like, yeah, I got to do this. It's just a smart political drama. It takes place in the 70s. A lot of really good actors are in it. And it is off-Broadway, which means a difficult commitment time-wise. So, you know, if you do a Broadway play, you kind of want it to be successful, but if it is, that means you're going to be doing this for the next 6 years or whatever. So I'll be doing this through October at the Signature Theater. It's the new group, and Scott Elliott is directing. So I'm very excited.
You have had a pretty consistent roster of stage. Sorry. You've done a pretty consistent number of plays over the years, even in between your TV series. Is there something about working on stage that is important to you?
Yeah. It's very different, you know. And it reminds me of why I decided to pursue this in the first place. When you're a kid, at least in my world, you're not doing movies. You're doing plays at school. And my mother was an actress in community theater, so I would go with her. And then they started to give me little parts in the plays. And it really was the most magical thing I could imagine. It really kind of still is. Like I was telling somebody about, you rehearse in a room, you know, a simple room, and you put tape on the ground. This is where the kitchen will be. And then there's that day, your first day, when you actually go to see the set that they've been working on. And you rehearse in the actual space, and it feels like Christmas. Like, oh my gosh, it's a real kitchen. There's a couch. That's exactly how I pictured the couch in that scene. You know, anyway, there's a lot of magic to be had from doing a play, and the day-to-dayness of it, last night was a great performance, and, you know, 2 nights ago was terrible, and then there was that night it rained and nobody showed up. It's really like an organism, you know. And it really is very, very exciting, and I'm thrilled to be doing one again. Broadway's another story, because it is, you know, 8 shows a week for sometimes months on end, and it's very, very hard work. It's very hard work. Like someone like Nathan Lane, who just does play after play after play, that's a kind of stamina I cannot imagine. I kudos to people who are able to do that.
Yeah.
And something like Angels in America, this, you know.
Yeah, that's
4 hour.
Commitment.
Yeah. It's quite amazing.
Gotcha. Let me ask you, the entertainment industry has been through, you know, quite a period in the last year. A lot of people have called it a reckoning about behavior, about things that have been accepted, you know, a level of bullying that can go from the mundane to really horrifying. As somebody who has been, you know, has come up through independent film and stage and into television, can I ask you about, do you feel like there was a level of behavior that you had to accept as you were building your career that maybe hopefully this moment is shedding a light on? Has that been any of your experience to have any kind of harassment that was?
I have to say, I have not been. I don't have my own stories about this. I for whatever reason, it's not something I've experienced firsthand. You know, I have theories as to why that might be, but I don't. I can't say that I know for sure. And then hearing the stories that people have lived through is just, you know, it's just mortifying. It's, you know, for lack of a better word, it is an exciting time that people are finding their voice and that they are able to talk about stuff that seemed like, you know, some people grow up with secrets about their family and this thing that they can never tell anyone or all hell will break loose. And people are able to tell these stories now about things they've been through in this business. And it's just, it really is like a chrysalis becoming a butterfly at this point, for, you know, not to be corny, but that's what I picture in my head. And only good can come from this, like people finding their voice and speaking their darknesses that they've been through, and people having to be accountable for their behavior. All of this is good. All of this leads towards the balancing of the scales, you know. and to be a woman during this time when we are being given opportunities that we might not have been at another time. I mean, I feel I'm so blessed. I've been so grateful, you know. I remember when I first started coming around, people were like, oh, it's hard for women to find. I have never, ever found that to be the case. I feel like I've been dropped into the universe of the entertainment industry always at exactly the right times. Like, for someone like Carmela Soprano, who is, you know, of questionable morality, who would have wanted, you know, in the days of Father Knows Best or whatever, there was no room for her. Same with Nurse Jackie. The fact that people are interested in seeing women who are conflicted and who are powerful and vulnerable, and, you know, there is such a wealth of personality types for women to be played at this time as our culture is going through this sort of rebirth. Anyway, it's part of life. Things change and grow and move, and it's always towards health, I have found, at least in this industry. You know, what's going on in our politics is another story, but this can only be good.
It is certainly a moment in time, and as you say, I think that the confluence of this opening and acceptance of voices and stories that wouldn't have found a place in a three network world is
exactly.
it can't be coincidental.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I feel like I just was born at exactly the right time for this stuff.
Well, TV fans and movie fans and stage fans would also agree. Edie Falco, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this week's show. We'll be back next time with another great episode. We'll be talking with Judith Light about the assassination of Gianni Versace. And if you like the show, I'd appreciate it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Let us know, too, who you want to hear from. What stars and producers should we invite on the show? Email us at podcasts@variety.com. See you next time.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.